The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. This is Eric Metaxas at the NRB. I was going to say it's the Eric Metaxas Show, but actually, I'm not so sure about that because Charlie Kirk is my guest. He's sitting right here. He's not that tall in person. And he really wanted to interview me for his show. And I thought, is it possible, since we don't have a lot of time, for me to interview him on my show and him to interview me on his show? And we're not sure, but we're going to try.
We'll simultaneously do this, Eric.
Is that what the word is, simultaneously?
We'll both be interviewing each other.
Really? All right, Charlie, why don't you go first?
All right, Eric, have you ever written a book?
You know, I do. I write books now. And I got to say that I have, I'm excited because I told the story of my coming to faith in the book that's out now, and I've wanted to write it for years. I thought, am I ever going to get to this? But I finally wrote it.
Fish out of water.
You and I have talked about it, so we're not going to talk about it now, but it's called Fish Out of Water, Search for the Meaning of Life. And at the end, I get to the Jesus part. So it's a book I really wrote for people to give to their smart friends who won't read a Christian book. But I have a book out in a couple of months called Is Atheism Dead?, which is a take on the
Nietzsche.
Well, yes, but it's a take on the Time magazine article 1966, Is God Dead? And my thesis is that in 1966, all the evidence kind of pointed to the idea that, yeah, God's probably not a good idea anymore, and science has disproved God, and blah, blah, blah. And I say that was the high watermark of that kind of evidence. And since then, the evidence has been moving in the other direction. But most people don't know it because the cultural narrative got stuck in the 1966, God's another kind of thing. We're not going to get into that anymore. So for 50 years, we've kind of been moving on that, and the evidence has been building. And I will just tell you, no kidding, the evidence for God at this point is so astonishing that atheism, I basically say in the book, you cannot on any level be an atheist if you want to be intellectually responsible. Atheism really is preposterous. If you say, I hate Christians, I don't like the Christian God, I don't believe in, I'm an agnostic, okay, we can talk. But the idea that there is no God who created the universe is utterly dead. There's not even a ghost of a chance that that is possible, and I really mean that.
Most of the academy believes that. So what are your major contentions or arguments?
Well, Christopher Hitchens was in the back of a car and somebody stuck a microphone in his face and said to him, what is the best argument on the other side? He was doing all of those, debates with not just Christians, but anybody who believes in God. And he says, in a moment of rare honesty, because he was kind of like a monster, he would just take no prisoners and he wouldn't concede a millimeter. But in a moment of rare honesty, he said, the fine-tuned argument, and he says, I think everybody on my side would agree that's the one that really gives us pause, that that you really have to work it out, blah, 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 blah. It was just amazing that he admitted it.
What is the fine-tuning argument?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, well, that's good.
Just kidding. No, the fine-tuning argument, some people are familiar with it, but a lot of people don't know about it. And it is truly so insane that you almost can't believe it. And you have to realize that scientists who are not even Christians are the ones that are putting it forth. But it's that the more you know from science, the more you can look at things that, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, you wouldn't know what to say. And science now gives us the ability to see things and to say that is an astonishing level of fine-tuning. It appears like fine-tuning. It couldn't have just happened. It's not random. For example, the size of the Earth. we now know that the magnetosphere of the Earth, that the magnetic field in the Earth is the only reason we're able to have life. And they say if the Earth were the slightest bit smaller or the slightest bit bigger, and I mean slightest bit, you know, 2%, 3%, there literally would be no life on Earth. But we've all grown up thinking, like, what does the size of a planet have to do? Like, there could be any kind of planet. There's different lives. So that alone, as one metric that they've discovered, they say anything with a slightly different mass, there's no life. If we didn't have a moon with almost exactly the mass that it has, there would be no life. And again, these are scientists who are themselves amazed at this and troubled by it. And it goes on and on and on and on. And when you start adding up these things, I mean, most people don't know that the planet Jupiter and Saturn, you'd think they're just specks in the sky. If you could see them with the naked eye, they're just tiny, tiny specks. But the mass of Jupiter is so huge that it is literally because of its existence near us that an infinity of comets and meteors are sucked away by its gravity and do not strike the Earth. And so there would be, I think I read, like literally 1,000 times as many meteors, comets, asteroids, whatever, hitting the Earth. And so if it weren't there, there is no life on Earth. So those are just a handful of things, but it goes up into the dozens and scores and hundreds. And so people are so troubled by it. Now, that's just one argument, but it is just the evidence for design is so total that atheists are deeply troubled by it, and they've come up with the insane pseudo theory of a multiverse. And yes. Anyway,
that's and Sam Harris will do that at times. I'd love to see you talk about Sam Harris about this stuff.
I don't. I talk in the book Is Atheism Dead? I talk about the science,
and then Hitchens,
and then I talk. Well, no, I was going to say I talk about the science for about a third of it, and there's a lot more science I haven't gotten into. Then I do biblical archaeology. They've discovered biblical Sodom. There's some, like, truly astonishing things. And then a third of the book, I deal with the new atheist. But I don't deal with all the four
horsemen?
Yeah, the four galloping horsemen. I don't deal with all of them. I really only deal with Dawkins and Hitchens because they alone said some things so totally preposterous that I could never get past it.
Well, and they're – I do have to say, they are clever. They are.
They're extremely clever, but that's kind of the point, is that they are extremely clever. But when you really boil it down to philosophy of thinking about, you know, God and stuff, they are almost children. I was embarrassed at how they were allowed to get away with some of the most sophomoric statements. And it's only because of their bluster and their viciousness in debate that they were able to pull it off.
And if you watch a lot of those debates that happen, and Harris got away from this in his latest book. What was that one book? I'll think of it in a sec. He tries to solve the Izzard
problem. Yo Mama So Fat?
No. The Harris book is I'll think of it. Where Dawkins and Hitchens, they go so vicious against the scriptures, and they go so. Their argument is to shock and awe the audience of how could you believe in a God?
No, exactly. That's what they do. That's what they do. And by doing that, that's exactly – you stated it perfectly. By doing that, they feel that they – it's funny, Charlie, you bring that up because that's exactly the opposite tack that I took. In other words, I said to myself, they mock the scriptures and try to make fun of stuff, and they go, see, so it's not true.
Yep, that's right.
I did the opposite. I set the bar very low. I said, let's just look at whether it's conceivable – that there is no creator God. And I come out to know it's not even conceivable. If you're intellectually honest, it's not even conceivable. So you can mock, you can say anything you like.
Yes.
You want to argue about this passage, whatever. But to go to the base of it, they are so incredibly childish in asserting that. And that is why they take the tack they do, because they don't really have – if they allow you to get the upper hand, they're done. So they have to just – use that kind of a debate tactic.
And they actually have massive leaps of faith within their own arguments. As you could tell, Eric, I've actually spent a lot of time watching them and reading their stuff.
No, I can't tell.
No, meaning
just
like,
kidding. I can tell. Yes, I know you do, Charlie.
We can go back to Donald
that.
Builds the Wall, Eric. If we want to go back to
the
other
books, he knows how to hurt me. So, the other day, he accused me of wearing skinny jeans. I could say stuff about you, but I'm a godly man. I don't do that.
Is only something you can't prove
in public.
I think I indicted you for wearing.
You did indict me. They were almost skinny jeans. They were almost skinny jeans, but the other ones were looking kind of ratty. So I said, nobody's going to notice.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey there, friends. Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204.
So, Sam Harris wrote The Moral Landscape. He tries to solve the is-ought problem that you can find morality through
the
a microscope.
The is-ought problem?
Yeah, so the is-ought problem, and you'll encounter this if any of these atheists have you on their podcasts, is that's their second hardest question to answer.
Yeah.
So the atheists, they can't answer the fine-tuning argument.
Right.
Or the creative design argument. They can't answer the ontological argument. They can't answer the question of creation, then therefore there must have been a starting point, because that's what the Big Bang yields.
Yeah,
right?
that's part of the book too. Yeah.
So, but they also can't argue the is-ought problem, which is, if something is, then what ought we to do?
Oh, exactly. But
which
I mean,
is morality.
Who came up with that term? Right. But it's one of those things.
I don't know the original.
But I'm saying it sounds philosophical and it's just stupid. Like it's the is-ought problem. Oh, yeah. We all know about the is-ought problem. What does it mean? Here's what it means. Boil it down.
I'm just saying that's what they
mean. No, I know that. I'm not making fun of you. I'm making fun of the phrase. What cracks me up is that if you say to an atheist, I want to murder a lot of people tomorrow and I want them to suffer. Is that on any level bad or evil? They literally cannot say that it is. They have literally no basis to say that anything is good or evil. They cannot face that, so they dodge it.
And that's
the famous is-ought problem.
Right, and that's what Harris and Hitchens and Dawkins dismiss that. And they dismiss it.
How do they dismiss it, yeah?
Well, so Hawkins and Hitchens Dawkins and Hitchens, geez Louise, will say that you have consciousness, and therefore it is very self-evident that you would never want to remove consciousness from another. I don't think...
Okay, but see, that's what I'm saying. Self-evident. That is total baloney. Like, complete... There's no self-evident in the scheme that they have created.
Right, and so they would say the only thing that we can really finally be able to say that is the ultimate purpose is your own ability to have consciousness.
Right, but you realize, like, it's just comedy, because the only reason they can pull off that baloney is because it means the crowd will go, yeah, and we're done. And the fact is, it doesn't matter if the groundlings like what you said, and that's how they play. It's the fact that, logically, that made no sense.
Well, and I think that some people on our side have taken their arguments too seriously, which you're not doing.
No, I can't. When I finally got into it, I just said, this is so... Some things deserve to be mocked. Some things deserve to be dismissed. Casting pearls before swine. In other words, if I am going to be someplace and I'm going to, and somebody's going to say, can you prove to me that your parents aren't mass murderers? Like, I don't need to go one syllable into proving that my parents... In other words, there's some things that are not worthy of answer. In fact, to even begin to answer does a disservice to truth. Bonhoeffer talks about this. And so that's... They have to play those games because, like, on a level playing field, they simply don't have a ghost of a chance.
So then Eric explains something, which is the obvious question a lot of people are thinking.
Yeah.
Which is, why do the smartest people believe this if it's so comedic?
Well, that's easy.
Then tell me.
That's very easy. Because we don't live in a universe where things are governed by intelligence or IQ. God is a God who says that I will use the foolish things. We have to be like a little child. In other words, the moral axis is the axis of the universe. It's the axis of the reality that God created. It is not about intelligence. So some of the smartest people can be absolute fools when it comes to deeper questions. And that's what I noticed. I thought to myself, somebody like Christopher Hitchens or Dawkins. Dawkins, for example, he's obviously a brilliant scientist. But when it comes to these things, there are children. There are people with 80 IQs, functional people who you would say, but that's not a smart person at all, who see what he does not see. He has blinded himself. I guess they've seared their consciences. That's the universe God created. And so intelligence is absolutely meaningless. You don't need intelligence. You need wisdom, which is completely apart from intelligence.
What's funny is you keep on saying, you know, philosophy, which actually in the Greek, which you speak fluent Greek, right?
Not fluent, but I can fool people who are not Greek speakers.
Ah, well, Eric, I'm somewhat disappointed.
I know. Who isn't? My father's disappointed. He's Greek.
You have to go back to the Lyceum, Eric. So philosophy comes back to this idea of the love of wisdom.
Wisdom. You see, that's the thing. The Greeks talked about wisdom. They didn't talk about intelligence.
No.
Intelligence is an enlightenment project, right? It's the deification of rationality.
This is an important point. So what's wrong with the Enlightenment? Why shouldn't we worship the Enlightenment? Because the Four Horsemen think the Enlightenment was when humanity actually began.
And that's why they're fools. If you think about it, the Enlightenment project is a reductionist project. God...
What do you mean by that?
Basically, God created us in his image. So if you think you can boil that down to zeros and ones, you're an idiot. We are walking poems. We are made in the image of Almighty God. It is something at least unfathomable. It is a deep mystery. So when somebody says, no, science is all that matters, we're all materialists. So here's what we got. We got, like, you're made up of these chemicals, and your brain is a computer, and da da da. It's completely reductionist. Have stripped out the central piece of existence. And so we're only going to talk about that. Why? Because we are going to declare that that's the only thing that exists, because anything that's ineffable or mysterious, we declare can't be known or discussed or investigated, and we're done. So it's pure force that makes us go into that way of thinking.
So for all the Biden voters out there, walk us through what the Enlightenment was.
I can't. I'm not going to pretend that I know the history of the Enlightenment. Effectively, you know, also when you talk about stuff like the Enlightenment, you're kind of talking about a lot of stuff. But it's sort of like man is the measure of all things, and we are going to move beyond the quote-unquote dark ages of faith and into the world of reason. I mean, it's really – you know what it is? It's kind of like every smart ass like 14-year-old discovers this and thinks he's smarter than his parents, and then like 20 years later he realizes, oh, maybe not. That's effectively the Enlightenment. It's the adolescence of man.
And I never liked the description of the Enlightenment. And it was a series of events and thinkers. Started really with Rene Descartes, who famously said, "I think, therefore I am." And that's not completely true.
And it's Popeye said, "I am what I am."
Yes, which well, is that, related. That'd be more it's Aristotelian, right? That
would no, be... but the thing is, you, Charlie, you're going to be able to describe the Enlightenment far better than I. Why? Because you didn't go to college.
No, because so I have you to know all able... their arguments because that's my full-time job.
Well, maybe. But the point is that you really know this stuff and can talk about it. I mean, I never read Descartes. You know, so I have a
that's why you're so smart.
I have a glancing knowledge of some of this stuff. But yes, tell the Biden voters, because, you know, in some ways I am a Biden voter. I didn't vote for Biden, but there are lacunae in my learning.
The Enlightenment was a series of quote-unquote breakthroughs that happened scientifically and mathematically and philosophically that were happening simultaneously. There's that word again, Eric.
Yeah.
And it happened also when the Gutenberg press was able to really increase literacy rates all across Europe. So you had this kind of very uncontrolled energy flow in Europe. So you had Sir Francis Bacon, who came up with the scientific method, who was a Christian, by the way.
And they were all Christians. Christianity invented science.
They didn't all end as Christians, though, right?
So they what?
They didn't all end their life as Christians.
Well,
but Bacon and Newton did, right? So Newton was a devout Christian. Newton actually wrote over 1 million words about biblical prophecy, more than he did about the Principia Mathematica.
Well, Newton's theology turns out was a little screwy, but who's counting? The fact of the matter is that science – this is one of the theses of my book, Is Atheism Dead? Now, I'm not the first person to come up with it, but when you really look at the facts, you understand that it was literally Christianity –
yes.
That led to science. There is no way
around
it.
Well, and let's define what science is. Science is the practice of trying to find knowledge and eventually mastery of the natural world. And science makes sense in a Christian worldview, not an Eastern worldview, because we actually don't forsake the natural world. Our Savior
that's right.
Came into the natural world. He walked amongst us. He changed water to wine. He walked on water. He actually, for the Eastern religion, the Buddhists in particular, the idea that the divine would actually become a human being is something that is so it's incomprehensible for them. But anyway, back to the Enlightenment. Because of all these scientific breakthroughs, then all of a sudden these philosophers started to say, well, we need to rethink the way that we actually have the mechanics of how we get our morality. Descartes started this, and then one trickster in particular opened up Pandora's box, which was a guy named by the name of Immanuel Kant.
And by the way, Pandora was Greek.
Go ahead. Yeah, all great things come from Greece.
That's
but
true.
That was 2,000 years ago.
Right.
So
2,500 years ago, to be exact.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, then Alexander the Great. That worked great, didn't it, Eric?
For a season.
Yeah.
For you, babe, I couldn't find the door, couldn't even see the floor.
Prescription Dispensing Labs is a national licensed pharmacy specializing in personalized prescription and natural medicine. The pharmacists at PD Labs are credited with formulating unique nasal sprays for the dreaded brain fog and a leader in uncovering new compounds to improve your health. PD Labs is one of the first pharmacies to now offer a telemedicine group trained in prevention medicine and how to restore your health. They have developed signature professional supplements that really work rather than just promotional advertising. PD Labs Pharmacy prides itself on innovation and amazing customer service that show dedication to your health. Today, everyone needs a choice in their health care, and they bring many refreshing options on how to maximize your body's amazing capabilities to bounce back. PD Labs has an extensive network of practitioners nationwide dedicated to true health care, not sick care. Visit their website, pdlabsrx.com, for free health tips, podcasts, and their popular online store. Call 888-909-0110. Ask for Ray and tell them Eric sent you. That's 888-909-0110.
Well, dreamed I saw the knights in armor.
Immanuel Kant wrote the whole idea. Again, it's like this much of literature in one book, but he came up with this idea of the categorical imperative. He liked the idea of the mechanics of Christianity, and he said, those of us that do not believe in God, we need to have our own way to find our own morality.
And good luck with that.
And it really didn't work out very well.
It cannot work out. It's like saying we're going to try to get 1 plus 1 to equal something greater than 2. We're going to try really, really hard. There is no way to do it. But if you really hate that, you can fake it until somebody's onto you.
And then finally it went to the Scottish Enlightenment, which I take full credit for.
Yeah,
and,
why not?
Yeah, sure, because that's what we do. And the Scots have had a better last 500 years than the Greeks.
Are you from Loch Lomond? No.
No, Kirk means church.
I know that.
You're welcome.
I know, but I mean, it's beautiful.
Thank you. And then you have all these things. You have Burke, who is Irish-Scottish. But more importantly, then you had David Hume, who was the first atheist.
Right.
He was the first guy that really was the one that inspired all the rest of these
tricksters. See, in Hume's time, it was
He was raised a Christian.
Insane to be an atheist. In other words, you can understand.
Oh, it was totally insane.
Well, look.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Culturally,
yes.
It was.
No, I don't mean it was popular, but what I'm saying is, like, you could see how somebody,
I see what you're
given
saying,
the knowledge base they had, that they could come out
so
to that place.
You're saying,
but it's,
Eric,
no longer possible.
Your thesis is really unique. Your thesis is actually the more that we Enlightenment principles are implemented and the more knowledge we have, the more it confirms God.
That's
the opposite.
That is exactly correct. And
that's
it is so astonishing.
Thesis.
Now, I wrote a piece. But I wrote a book a while ago called Miracles, and I talk about this a little bit.
It's a really good book.
Thank you. Miracles by Eric Metaxas. Available at mystore.com. Use the code Eric.
I never knew he wrote books, everybody.
But seriously, honestly, the thing is that I remember kind of figuring this out when I wrote that book. I said, this is kind of weird because no one ever talked about this. Science is now leading us to faith in God.
Yes.
And so
a thinking person's a believing person.
Well, that's right. So when I wrote that, the publisher said, oh, you know, you should write an op-ed to kind of, and I looked at the book and I thought, this is the most interesting thing. So I wrote an op-ed that they published in the Wall Street Journal. I'd never been published in the journal before, and they published it. It became, this is not a joke, because this is such an astonishing thing to say in this day and age. The title was Science Increasingly Makes the Case for God. It became the most popular shared article in the history of the journal. It was like lunacy. It went to 650,000 Facebook shares.
That's insane.
And that's not because I wrote it. It's just because most people are so hungry for this idea, and they're thinking, I've never heard this. Why is nobody, why? And the Wall Street Journal, because it was Christmas, they kind of let it slip by. I think, like, if it had been a normal time, they would have said, this is too pro-God. We can't go there.
And there's a reason for this, though, Eric, is that the intelligentsia and the academics, if they admit that there's a creator, they think they become less important. There is a psychological play.
Well, they do become less important
in their own eyes,
if they hate that creator. There's such irony, yeah.
And so if you play out Enlightenment principles without the anchoring of the truth of the gospel, you then get Nietzsche. Which is...
Well, but that's exactly the point. In other words, you have very, very few atheists or God haters who are honest. Actually, in the book, Is Atheism Dead?, I stumbled on 3 atheists who are really the most intellectually honest atheists. And one of them is Anthony Flew, who was the academic hero of the atheists in the 20th century. Another one is Sartre, and the other one is Camus. And so I wrote a chapter because the 3 of them, most people don't know this. I'm always amazed when I discover stuff and I think, I never heard of this, most people never heard of this. Both Camus and Sartre were dedicated atheists, and they were intellectually brave enough to stare into the abyss of atheism. In other words, they didn't do what Hitchens and these others do, which is kind of, you know,
just edges,
blow
right?
smoke forever because they're totally full of baloney. What they did was they were intellectually honest, and they realized at the end of their lives that it was not possible to create any kind of morality apart from God. So they were really sick about this. And eventually, both of them, in my estimation, you can read the details in the book, but in my estimation, both of them came to faith at the end of their lives. Nobody knows this, and I think how curious that both of them and Flew, who were the most dedicated atheists, saw all the way through to the bottom, and eventually came to believe in God. Yes. I mean, doesn't that tell you everything?
Yeah, and the 20th century, which is the untold story of the 20th century, and you would agree with this, and I'm sure you write about it in your book, is
that— Did I write a book, Charlie?
Huh?
Did I write a book?
I don't know, Eric. Do you actually write your own books?
You know, I've written some of them. Is Atheism Dead is the most recent, and I'm going to have to check with my staff on who wrote that.
You don't have a whole staff that writes them for you?
No, no, I can't afford that yet.
Yeah. So
I'm not as good a fundraiser as Charlie
Kirk. Your
Kirk.
Output is pretty incredible, Eric. It's like a book every 6 months.
Not quite, but if I didn't have to do radio and stuff, it would be.
You know, those little annoyances of communicating to me.
I know. I know. Exactly.
So Nietzsche.
So Nietzsche.
Proclaimed God was dead.
Proclaimed God was dead.
He came up with his own form of morality where he said the only thing that you can possibly know is your will. And then he came up with this idea of the Superman, the Übermensch. Did you know, I might teach you something, every World War II conscripted soldier in the German army was given Nietzsche's book and was forced to read it throughout World
War
I?
Never, ever heard that. I mean, I learn a lot from you, don't kid yourself. And honestly, I've never heard that before.
And it laid the foundation for 1930s Germany. Imagine you have a bunch of 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22-year-olds
yes.
in the trenches in total, absolute, horrendous condition, and you're reading nothing but Nietzsche.
I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside.
People need to understand this history, this truth, because when you talk about Nietzsche, again, Nietzsche himself was brave enough to see to the bottom. Now, did
Before
he
became a psychopath.
And by the way, his father was a pastor. Mm-hmm. I visited the church where his father pastored. But wow. But here's the key. In Germany, he decides that he hates God, he hates all that stuff. But when he looks to the bottom of it, what happens? He goes insane.
Well, he actually comes up with the multiverse theory.
You're kidding.
Well, in some way, he thinks, and this is where some people said, oh, Nietzsche lost his mind, is that this existence isn't the real existence, and there's unlimited amounts of other existences
right.
happening at the same time.
Right.
And
it sounds Buddhist.
Well, it could. Yeah, whatever it is, he comes up with that the last 10 years of his life. But the practice of that belief is the only way that he thought you could revert yourself back from is this idea of your will. And then the collective will. And he was the philosopher that was responsible, the only one that was responsible for both Germany and Stalinist Russia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wow, when you think about what
good track record.
What one maniac could do. I mean, I think you have to cut to the chase and say he was used by Satan very, very powerfully.
Of course he was.
Be a force for genuine evil in human history. And we need to go back to what you're talking about, the is-ought. If you do not believe in God, you have to be intellectually honest and say there's no such thing as good or evil, and to leap to the next thing, if that is true, life is meaningless to the point of I probably should just surf on my will, like, to just murder and do anything
well,
I
funny.
Can for self-satisfaction or kill myself. There is no other option.
So in 1920-something, you could look up, there's two University of Chicago students. You know about this?
Yes, I do.
What were their two names?
Leopold and Loeb.
There you go. Who actually, they were Nietzsche guys.
Yeah, I know.
And they decided, like, hey, all we have is our will, and we want to go commit cold-blooded murder. And they
Leopold
did.
Leopold and Loeb. But you understand that it just happened a couple of years ago. Who were the dudes in the trench coats?
You mean Columbine?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's the same thing, but I don't remember their names.
I don't like to say their names.
Dylan and Klebold, right?
I don't like seeing their names.
Well, I mean, think how sad that they were. Sometimes.
It was April 20th, 19. I'll think of it.
Yeah, but I mean, but it was the same. It was the same thing. And it is heartbreaking that these young men and heartbreaking that Leopold and Loeb could swallow a satanic lie. And not only do harm to others, but do infinite harm to themselves. These ideas are not—they're not fun. They are wicked. People need to understand that the ideas matter.
Yeah, that's how you.
Have I been interviewing you on my show? It doesn't seem like it. I think I've failed.
Because I'm really interested in this book, and I want everyone to buy it because Eric is a struggling author.
Well, it,
and
no,
he needs
listen,
as much support.
I don't
possible.
Know. I don't know how to raise money. Charlie Kirk, he's amassed an army of young people, and he has the talent to do that. So I need to team up with somebody, you know, who can do that. Because I got a couple of things I'd like to do too, besides write books.
So people can find your book.
I guess they can find it. Is Atheism Dead? And actually, this is true. This is the first time I've said this because I just think, oh, it's so far in the future. But it matters hugely how many people pre-order it, because this is true, folks. This is how culture works. If enough people pre-order the book, they'll always give you the lowest price between the day you order it and when it launches, October 19th. But if enough people pre-order it, that goes on to the first week sales, which means that it could conceivably hit the New York Times list.
Oh, we would love that.
If it does, culturally, it can reach all kinds of people who are not on our page theologically. And so these things actually do matter. So if you're thinking about buying a book, always buy it as soon as possible.
What I love about your thesis, and it is unique, Eric, is that the more that these people try to disprove God, they're actually going in
but
the that, direction.
But Charlie, that's
God.
Why I think we're at some point in the end times, because this is incontrovertible. It's not a thesis. When you look at it, it is not. No, but believe me, if something is, I'm not 100% sure. This is not that case. This is just absolutely astonishing. One of the pieces, I mean, the science piece. Generally, you just stated the thesis, but there are three pieces. There's the Big Bang, which I won't go into. There's the fine-tuned universe, which they also call the anthropic principle, whatever. But the third piece, why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because they use long words
right.
intentionally to intimidate normal yeah. people from engaging in their nonsense.
But,
that's
but,
why.
But the third piece, which I do think is original to my book, at least on a popular level, I happen to have the privilege of being friends with a guy named James Tour, who is at Rice University. He's a Jewish guy from Long Island who accepted Jesus in college. He is literally the smartest nanoscientist on planet Earth. He's a super genius. He knows more about the nano level. He creates molecules in the lab. No one has ever done what he does. So he's the world expert on that level. And what it means, why I'm saying this is because he says the idea of life arising randomly from non-life, what they call abiogenesis, whatever, is beyond ridiculous. In other words, the more science learns, the more we can categorically say there is zero chance this ever happened. In 1952, when the University of Chicago scientists did this thing in the lab, they ran some electricity through what they called, you know, the prebiotic soup solution. They got some amino acids. They go, oh, wow, that's how it happened 4 billion plus years ago, right? In 70 years, we have not moved that ball forward a millimeter, and he is ready to declare that all the funding for this stuff should be canceled because we've tried for 70 years, and it's like climbing up a ladder that's leaning against the wrong building. We need to go back down and start over.
Another great resource is an organization called the Discovery Institute.
Oh, that's where I got almost everything.
And they, Hoover Institution, which is really great, they have a video that should be seen by every single person with four scientists. I'm sure you've mentioned one of
yeah.
them. And they were in some sort of like hotel room in Rome or something. No, it's kind of like this strange setting. And they just go after Darwin for two hours.
I haven't seen that.
It's really good.
I'm a married man with a child. I don't have this kind of time.
No, this is the sort of stuff people need to see. I think we're almost out of time, Eric.
Well, since it's my show, it's my job to say, you're right, Charlie.
Is it your show?
No. Actually, we're going to air this on my show, but I know you're going to air it on your show. Your show will get a lot more attention, and so it's kind of fun that we get to do this. But this is so much fun. I hate to stop. I love talking to you. You are just, you're one of my favorite people in the world, and it's just,
thank you.
It's just so, but of course, but it's so much fun to talk to you because you love Jesus, you love the Bible, you didn't get screwed up by going to college, and God is using you, and I believe great things are ahead, not just for you, but for the United States of America and for humanity in general. So we can end by saying praise the Lord.
There's Wow.
Oh,
that's all
man.
I can say. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, boy.
I can say it backwards. Wow.
Who are you?
Listen, Charlie Kirk, man. Folks, if you didn't get the video, okay, I'll say it again. Go to ericmetaxas.com, sign up for our newsletter. You need the video of my conversation with Charlie Kirk. You need to send it to your friends. Please, please. People say, hey, what can I do? You could do that. You can send some of these videos to everyone you know. Post it on social media. What are you on?
Yeah.
You're on Telegram, Signal, Gab, Parler, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Post this stuff.
If you want to save the nation or be a small part of saving the nation,
yeah.
Sign up for the newsletter. Send the videos
around.
Boom.
You're saying it like it's a joke. I mean, we like to be lighthearted, but we're serious. We produce this content, and we want you to share it.
Come on. We're sweating here with content.
We're hoping that you'll share it.
Hard.
Well, listen, I just want to say in hour two, we've got our friend Kevin McCullough. He's talking about the Biden administration is to the left of Karl Marx. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No,
but he's going to talk
didn't
about
he
that.
Did he create all those toys, the Marx toys?
Yes,
Great Garloo
Marx.
Is a Marx toy.
A lot of those Marx toys were created by Karl Marx. Mm-hmm. I think that there was a thing that you would ride, a little horse called, I forgot. Somebody's going to write in with that, but don't.
Yeah.
Albin.
Yes, sir.
We haven't yet aired my conversation. We just, in this hour, we aired the conversation with Charlie Kirk, but the panel with Charlie Kirk, myself, Vody Baucom Jr.,
yes.
and Owen Strawn, that was, everybody raved and raved about that. So we need to get that online on the video.
Yeah, we finally got the pieces and we're putting it together.
Okay.
Next week, we're running that. Baby.
So we're running it on the radio. But if you want to see it before then,
yeah.
if you're signed up for ericmetaxas.com for the newsletter, you'll get it. Or maybe on Rumble, you can find it. But honestly, that was another. We just had some tremendous content at the NRB last week.
Man. Yeah.
So I should mention before we go, Albin,
yes.
tomorrow we have Erwin Lutzer, who does the best Billy Graham impression you've ever heard.
Yes.
If you only tune in for that, it's toward the end of the program. It's going to blow your mind.
Yes.
Just wait. Okay. And he has a new book out, which is way more important. But also tomorrow, I'm going to do a dramatic reading of my July 4th book. I wrote a book celebrating July 4th. It's called Yankee Doodle Muggsy. Many of you already have a copy. If you want a copy, you can go to mystore.com. Mystore.com, use the code Eric. The prices are insane. I promise you. We just said, let's just do this because a lot of people don't know about this book. They don't know what they're getting into. They're not going to pay the price they should pay. So let's just discount it heavily. And when you get it, you'll be embarrassed that you paid so little.
Yes.
You'll see. You'll see. My promise to you. But that's in celebration of July 4th weekend and the independence of this nation and our self-government and freedom. I'm going to do dramatic reading tomorrow of Yankee Doodle Muggsy. And you'll hear in the echo of it that it's Paul Revere's ride is kind of in the background of the verse. You'll see that there's a connection there. Anyway, so that's tomorrow. And we also have a special Ask Metaxas segment.
Yes, we're going to do
and
that.
And a listener rights segment. And, oh, it's going to get nuts.
Ooh,
so that's
will.
Tomorrow. Yeah. Don't forget mystore.com, Yankee Doodle Muggsy, if you want to read along with the actual
and
text.
Also, if you're a real American, you're going to get your supplements from Nutramedics.com.
You know something?
Yes.
Those other communist supplement companies, you don't want to give them money, all right, because that funnels right to the CCP. You want to go to Nutramedics.com. You want to use the code Eric to get a whopping 20% off, and then you can tithe that money.
Yes.
But let me say this. Their stuff is very high quality.
No.
But not just that. They give 50% of all their profits to missions organizations. If you buy your stuff at like Duane Reade or CVS or Target or Costco or whatever, where do you think that money goes? Let me give you a hint. Not to missions organizations.
No.
Right. It goes probably to BLM or probably Joe Biden the guy, he's still paying back the hair transplants from years ago because
they're
very expensive.
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's probably who it goes to. Well, we're out of time.
We are.
But fortunately for you, there's more. Don't go away.
Jesus, it's your story.